Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We'll be talking about the present and future with Zora Mulligan, the new Missouri Commissioner of Higher Education. Commissioner Mulligan has served as Assistant Commissioner, General Counsel, and Legislative Liaison for the Missouri Department of Higher Education. She's a former Executive Director of the Missouri Community College Association and was the Chief of Staff for the University of Missouri system prior to her appointment as Commissioner for Higher Education. She joins me and St. Louis Public Radio education reporter Dale Singer in our studio. Commissioner Mulligan, thanks so much for being with us.
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Well, have you gotten your feet grounded yet? It's only been a short time that you've been on the job.
It's definitely been a grounding and hot foot experience in my first couple of months. We're tackling some significant issues, and it's been a pleasure to be able to hit the ground running.
The fact that you've been around the system for a few years now, and taking this job, did you discover anything that was a surprise to you?
I don't think that there have been any significant surprises. Certainly as the higher education community learns to work with kind of a new group of legislators and a new governor, I think we'll learn a lot going forward. But for the time being, it's been a pretty predictable course.
And those challenges you mentioned, you have many of those. What are some of them?
We do have many of those. The first thing and kind of the framework for all of our work at the department is the coordinated plan that the Coordinating Board for Higher Education adopted last year. That coordinated plan asks the state to focus on attainment, affordability, quality, research and innovation, and then investment advocacy and partnership. And so we're trying to structure all of the department's work around those five goals. Huh. Another issue that we've been working on is the higher education system review, which was initiated last year by some members of the General Assembly who asked the department to take a look at the public higher education system in the state of Missouri to determine whether it's meeting Missourians' needs in terms of workforce preparation and access to education, and then to recommend changes based on those determinations. So that's been very interesting work.
You've done a lot of work with the legislature in the past, given your resume. Do you have the sense, and some people do feel this way, that there is a certain, I don't want to call it animosity, but not quite friendly attitude by the legislature for the higher education system here?
Sure. I know that people have that perception. I mean, my experience in working with legislators has been that they expect a lot of our institutions, particularly the public institutions in which they invest a significant amount of state money. And so, they have high expectations in terms of graduation rates, in terms of workforce preparation, and they do get frustrated when they feel that institutions aren't living up to those expectations. But overall, I think it's a very productive and supportive relationship.
Good.
I guess they kind of suffered last November then with all of everything that was going on in Columbia and following. Has that rift been healed, do you think?
Sure. An experience like that takes a while to get over. There have definitely been signs, positive signs, in the last couple of months about that relationship. The Speaker of the House, Todd Richardson, was in Columbia at the Chamber of Commerce a couple of weeks ago and reassured members of that community that the university wouldn't be punished in terms of budget decisions. So I think there definitely is forward progress. I mean, I think it's a situation where maybe you fight most with the one you love the most. I mean, the people in the General Assembly really do have tremendous affection for and respect for our institutions of higher education. And it was the depth of that emotion that led, I think, to the conflict last year.
What is your role in dealing with that? Not the legislature, but in the diversity issue and the inclusiveness issue that surfaced last year.
Sure. So in terms of the Department of Higher Education's role, closing attainment gaps is one of the central items within the coordinated plan. So we have a big goal of getting to 60% of working Missourians who have a post-secondary credential. That's the big goal. But within that, there are several populations that we know we have to do a better job of educating. That would include students who are first-generation college students. It could include racially diverse students. It would include students from rural areas who might not have access to post-secondary education. So closing those gaps is part of what the department does. The kinds of ways that we're addressing that are, changing the way our state's institutions address developmental or remedial education, changing the way their math requirements are structured, those kinds of things that are all obstacles to completion.
I understand it from the academic point of view. I'm thinking of the inclusive point of view. That seemed to be the big problem, that the African-American community within the Mizzou system, on the Mizzou campus, felt it was not really included.
Sure. So the events of last November certainly brought the issue to the attention of every president at every public and private college and university across the state. I was just across the street at SLU, and they talked a lot about, you know, their experience and what they have learned and done after their own experiences with students voicing their concerns about the campus environment. So the department has a limited role, frankly, in that area, but we have been working with the presidents and chancellors to facilitate the conversation.
Would you like to see a bigger system of what they call safe spaces on campus, or is that coddling students who really are about to become adults a little bit more than they should be?
Many of the conversations around this issue are very divisive. I choose to focus on the one about which we can all agree, which is that we have to improve completion rates for all students, including those from diverse backgrounds. The safe space issue is one of tremendous challenge, frankly, for university communities in trying to find the balance between the free expression of ideas and a supportive environment that many students expect to be welcomed by.
So you were chief of staff at the system during everything that happened last November, right?
I was.
Did you get a sense that the system's reputation suffered nationally, and how do you think they're rebounding?
That's a good question. The system certainly was the subject of a lot of national conversation. Whether its reputation suffered or not, I think, depends on your perspective. It also created the opportunity for the institution to be a real leader in terms of creating spaces on campus or creating opportunities on campus where everyone can succeed and where everyone can be part of the community. I think they've taken a lot of very, very positive steps in terms of making each of the campuses more welcoming and helping students understand their role, helping faculty understand what they can do to make sure that all students succeed. And so it was a significant event and a major trauma. It will take a while to recover from that, but I think many, many positive strides are being made. One of those, incidentally, would be hiring a president who has a strong track record of working on diversity. Incoming President Choi has done some work in that area in Connecticut, and I think that he will bring positive experience to his work here in Missouri.
On the issue of campus safety, it's just brought to the fore once again, given what happened yesterday at Ohio State. How do you look at that, what happened there, and the challenges we face, or any campus faces anymore, with regard to issues such as these?
Yeah. Well, I think as people who pay attention to higher education know, there was a lot of conversation in the legislature last year about whether concealed carry should be permitted on campus. Yeah. And I think that's what you're asking about. Yeah. The people who were advocating on that issue, the public higher education institutions are uncomfortable with the idea of concealed carry on campus. And that's, due in part to the nature of students. Many of them are young people. Some of them struggle with mental health issues. Alcohol may be involved sometimes. They're living together in very close quarters. So there were definitely some concerns that were articulated by the folks who advocate on behalf of our institutions. They were able to work with the legislators who are the strongest proponents of the concealed carry legislation to negotiate a compromise that they felt was a reasonable balance. And so, there were the ability to prohibit guns in residence halls, for example, or in research labs, where there are combustible items. So it's a difficult balance to strike. I mean, the people on either end of the argument have very deeply held beliefs. But I think a lot of the work that was done last year was good progress toward finding that middle ground.
Taking the issue of guns aside, I'm really thinking in terms of a terrorist act, if you will, if this was in fact a terrorist act yesterday, or of having some sort of an incident on campus. How do you react to that? How is the system prepared to react to that kind of a threat?
Yeah. All of the campuses do, emergency preparedness tabletop exercises. But if I learned one thing last year at the University of Missouri, it's that no amount of preparation or conversation about a hypothetical situation can really adequately prepare you for the difficult realities of an event of that nature actually unfolding. It's simply much, much more complicated than you can ever anticipate in a hypothetical exercise. However, it's the best you can do. Have the conversation, run through the exercises to find out where your weaknesses are. I have experience with campus security officers or campus police officers at a range of different institutions, the community colleges, the University of Missouri system campuses, other institutions. And those people are unusually talented men and women who think about this stuff every day and are preparing for it every day.
In your role now, I mean, how much, I don't want to say power, but how much influence do you have on individual campuses, and how much are they autonomous from your agency?
Sure. So Missouri is a state which has a coordinating board that works with independently governed institutions, which means, we have certain. I wouldn't say power over the institution, but for example, we have the authority to approve new academic program proposals, which is actually a pretty substantive relationship. We're also tasked with coordinating the state's system of public higher education, and that's part of what I mentioned earlier. We're in the middle of that system review where we're looking at each institution's role and mission within the state and making recommendations about how to allocate the resource that is our public higher education system. At the same time, the institutions, you know, are still governed by locally elected boards in the case of community colleges, or gubernatorially appointed boards in the case of the universities, so they do have some autonomy.
What kind of shape overall is the system in? I mean, I know there are issues here in St. Louis with the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Money is an issue, and funding obviously is one of the first things that you addressed when we started our conversation here. Basically, what kind of shape is it in?
Sure. I think that's a good question. It's hard to answer in any absolute way. All of our institutions would be able to invest more money very quickly. You know, if additional money was available, they would find a lot of good uses for it. Exactly. And so I don't want to give the impression that everything is fine. They certainly, again, could, you know, add new programs or strengthen student support services with additional investments. But on the whole, I think the system is doing very well. We educate a whole lot of people. We're working hard to improve completion rates, attainment rates. So overall, I think the system is pretty healthy.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. Go ahead, Dale.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, in Missouri, if you tell somebody, we're doing a great job, and then you turn around and say, we need more money, generally the answer is, why do you need more money? You're already doing a great job. So how do you balance those two things?
Well, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. You can always improve. I mean, one of the things we've learned as we've looked at college completion over the last 5 or so years is that many of the things that a college has to do to really substantially increase completion, they cost money. Students need better support services. They need tutoring. All those extra layers of cost that can be enhanced with additional investments.
Well, of course, I have to take a break in a moment, but once we start talking about money, we have to talk about how much it costs students to attend these colleges and universities. It's out of control.
Well, I wouldn't say it's out of control. I know that it's a significant expense for families or for students who are paying their own way. Missouri has done an exemplary job in the national level of keeping costs down. Our cost has increased more slowly than any other state over the last 5 years, and I think that has been a real benefit to students and their families.
What is the average debt that students leave the system with? Do you have any idea?
Yeah. I actually don't have the average debt in front of me. I know that for many students it's significant. The state invests resources in student financial aid to the maximum extent possible. That financial aid investment has more than doubled in the last 5 years. So the state is doing what it can, you know, to work with institutions to keep tuition increases limited, to invest in financial aid programs. So we're doing what we can.
But still, nationally, debt for college students is well over $1 trillion more than credit card debt, I think, still, which is what is most often cited, I guess, in this area. I have to take a break now. We're talking with Zora Mulligan, who is the Missouri Commissioner for Higher Education, a post she has held since last August, I believe, the end of August. We'll come back, Dale Singer and I, to continue the conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk at stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer a tweet, do that at STL on air. Back with Zora Mulligan in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
To help people or more people get college degrees, I guess it helps to have them be better prepared for college in the first place. How closely do you work with the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to make sure that when people get out of high school, they're ready to go to college?
Yeah, we actually work very closely with the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, and this is a topic about which you can imagine we have a lot of discussion. Everybody has anecdotal evidence about a student that they know who did very well in high school, who gets to college and is told that they're not ready for college-level work and they have to take you know, developmental or remedial classes. So we definitely talk with our K-12 partners a lot about that, both DESE and the associations that represent the different interests. The good news is there's agreement that we should be aligned. The bad news is it's hard and time-consuming to get to that alignment. But I think that the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education's new approach to assessment is a step in the right direction.
What about your association with the Department of Education nationally? What actually is the relationship between that and post-secondary education?
Sure. So it really varies. You know, under President Obama, the Department of Education had a very active role in post-secondary education, and that isn't always the case in a presidential administration. The Obama administration was really instrumental in talking about the completion agenda. It used to be that colleges and universities' main point of pride was enrollment. You know, how many students do we have in seats this year? Over the course of the Obama administration, the conversation evolved into one that really emphasized success and completion. So it's not enough just to get them there. They have to leave with something of value. The Obama administration also really opened people's minds in terms of considering the value of certificates as valuable post-secondary credentials. So that might be a program that takes a year or less to complete, but that gives the person the skills they need to get into the workforce and start earning quickly. Ideally, those programs would stack so that you could end up with a degree after a certain, you know, number of those certificate programs. So it really varies. You know, in terms of a Trump administration approach to post-secondary education, like everybody, I'm waiting to hear the details and looking forward to figuring out how that's going to work.
Any sense of Mrs. DeVos and what she brings to the table?
Most of what I've read about her suggests that she has a very strong interest in K-12 education. I don't know as much about her views on post-secondary education.
In terms of a Trump administration, do you anticipate that, given some of the statements during the campaign, foreign students might be a little less likely or a little less eager to come to the United States?
I think that's a good question. You know, I know that our colleges and universities are working very hard to make sure that their international students feel comfortable on campus and that they understand that within the campus community they're welcomed and appreciated. You know, I don't know how that weighs against statements that anyone at the national level might make, but it remains to be seen.
I know that they're valuable in many ways to schools, but they're particularly valuable financially, aren't they? I mean, they pay out of state tuition, and recruiting them, I guess, it really helps schools' bottom line, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, international students, as you say, are important for a variety of reasons on campuses. They do bring with them tuition dollars. They also really bring a unique opportunity for native students to learn about other cultures in a way that they might not have the opportunity to otherwise. So they really add tremendous value to the institutions, and they're highly, highly valued by the higher education leaders. So I know that those leaders will be doing all they can to make sure they continue to have strong recruitment in international student populations.
This change of administration certainly does raise a lot of questions. Though, doesn't it? A lot of questions yet to be answered. Let's take some calls. If you're willing to do that and ready, we'll bring in Richard calling from St. Louis. Richard, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm interested in increasing graduation rates. I think everybody is. But the fairly obvious way to do that, of course, is to lower standards. And you can graduate the 100% by reducing standards. How are you going to monitor the quality of the graduate when you put such emphasis on graduation rates?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. You know, certainly faculty express skepticism about completion goals because they're concerned about that drag on quality. But faculty are really also the strongest guard against a degradation of quality. Academic programs are of tremendous, tremendous importance to the faculty members who teach them, and they really protect the quality of those programs. You know, in some areas, it's fairly easy to determine whether the program is of high quality. So those would be the kinds of programs that end in a licensure. So nursing, teaching, those kinds of things where you have to take a test at the end to make sure that your students can perform in the workplace. We actually have a performance funding model that measures student success in those kinds of end of program experiences. So it's something that we're paying attention to in the programs where we have the ability to. And then on a pilot basis, we're talking about how to measure quality in those other programs where there's no end assessment.
Are there union pressures amongst faculty at Mizzou and in the system, within the system?
Did you say union? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Union.
Labor issues.
Yeah. So at UMSL, certainly some faculty members have expressed interest in organizing the University of Missouri in Columbia campus. The primary focus has been graduate students. There are lots of different ways that faculty make their opinions known and have an impact on institutional governance at all of the UM campuses. And I think this is true at many of the universities, if not all throughout the state. There's a very strong faculty senate or faculty council that doesn't act as a union, but it's a very, very strong voice for the faculty.
Let's take another call. And this time it'll be Brian calling from St. Louis. Brian, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've been in higher education for the last quarter century, and I've seen a number of concurrent trends. But two that concern me the most are the increasing numbers of administrators taking high-paid jobs and not spending any time in the classroom, and the increased reliance on adjunct faculty. And I think the two are kind of in relation. I think the low pay of adjunct professors without benefits subsidizes the incredibly high pay of all these administrators. We have a chancellor at the University of Missouri who makes twice the salary of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he gets free housing and a car. I wonder what you're going to do to equalize the playing field, because I don't think you'd have all this union stuff if you paid the professors a livable wage. Thank you.
So I appreciate the observation. This another of the performance funding measures, actually, that the public universities have adopted is a ratio of overall administrative costs to the amount spent on instruction. So, again, it's something that we pay attention to, and that's part of the overall performance structure.
I want to ask about that adjunct question, though, because with an increasing number of adjunct faculty teaching classes, are students getting the kind of education they think they're getting as opposed to, say, you know, full-time faculty?
I think it varies, you know, from instructor to instructor. Many adjunct instructors bring a particular area of expertise. In some cases, an adjunct instructor may be a person who's actually worked in the field in which they're offering instruction, and so they bring that work-based perspective to the classroom. In other cases, you know, it may be a newer faculty member who's energetic and enthused. So, you know, I really think it varies. There are always more differences among groups than between groups. So I think it's hard to make generalizations.
Let's bring in another caller. Carissa joins us again from St. Louis. Carissa, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. First, I would just like to say congratulations to Commissioner Mulligan. Welcome. And so my name is Carissa. I lead a statewide coalition of students called the Active Advocacy Coalition. And some of our priorities include disinvestment from merit-based aid, increased investment in need-based aid, as well as in-state tuition for students with deferred action or students that are undocumented. So I'm hoping you might just shed any light that you might have on any of these issues in terms of your priorities moving forward.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I appreciate the welcome. You know, the debate between merit-based aid and need-based aid is a really important one, and it's happening at the national level. You know, here in the state of Missouri, as I'm sure you're aware, we have a need-based program, Access Missouri, that's the largest number of dollars invested in any of the public scholarship programs. We do also have merit-based programs, but they are smaller investments. So Bright Flight is a smaller overall appropriation than our need-based program, Access Missouri. All that being said, we will be at the department taking a look at the total portfolio of our financial aid programs in the next couple of years to figure out whether in their totality, whether altogether they're doing the best to meet the state's needs. And the question of merit versus need and the balance between those two will certainly be one that group considers.
Is funding the financial situation your biggest challenge looking ahead?
I think it is. You know, it's hard not to read headlines about the potential of significant mid-year withholdings without being concerned about my own organization and those with which I work. You know, those mid-year withholdings have a huge effect on institutions. Higher education is often one of the places that budget makers look to balance the budget. And so when there's a shortfall in revenue, higher education often bears the brunt of that. And that affects, you know, the ability to invest in full-time faculty, that invests in the ability to provide student support. It really impacts the institution at its core.
Do you think the challenges for finance plus the institutional review that's going on now could actually lead to the closure of some campus?
I don't think that is... I'm a person who generally believes it's unlikely we're going to close any public institutions in the state of Missouri unless the leaders of a couple of institutions sit down together and decide together, perhaps with the support of the department, that it might be the wise course. You know, people often say Missouri has too many colleges and universities. It does have very, very many colleges and universities, particularly, you know, if you look at an area like St. Louis, which is so rich in independent institutions, community college, St. Louis Community College, St. Charles Community College, Umsl, Harris Stowe. But each of those, you know, is serving a particular kind of student or a particular market. And in many cases, they offer a particular kind of program. In more rural areas, you have a different situation, which is that the university is the major lifeblood of many of our small towns throughout the state. And without those institutions, those towns and the regions that they're the center of would really struggle more deeply than they already are. So I think closure of institutions is a very unlikely alternative, but you can never say never.
You have some background with community colleges as well. And President Obama, of course, he's on his way out now, has talked about free tuition for community college students. Your thoughts on that? Is that a good idea, a practical idea? Is it, would it be helpful to institutions such as you're a part of here?
Sure. So a lot of people don't know that in Missouri we actually have free community college tuition for students who come to community college right after high school. The A-plus program is a free community college program. It doesn't, not every single student who can participate in it, so it's not quite as broad as what President Obama proposed. But it's still a program that has had a tremendous impact on the lives of many, many Missourians.
Yeah. But it's not really free. I mean, somebody's paying those professors. Somebody's paying to run those buildings. So where's the money coming from?
Sure. So the A-plus program is a state financial aid program. The legislature over the years has invested in it. Governors have made it a priority. So you're right, it's not free, but it does come through a state appropriation.
We just have a limited time left, and I wanted to bring this in. NPR had a story yesterday about the large number of non-traditional students who are attending college these days, older students, almost half of all students. Is that the case here? And if so, what is the response to that influx?
Sure. So it really varies by institution. You know, the community colleges serve many, many non-traditional students. Some of the regional institutions serve many non-traditional students. I know here at UMSL, they have many adult learners, people who've been out in the workforce and realize they need to get a degree to really progress in their work. So, yes, it's definitely a major trend here in Missouri, and it's one that I hope to see more of. We're below the national average in terms of the number of adults who have any kind of post-secondary credential, and it's important to the Department of Higher Education that we continue to increase that.
All right. A minute left. Dale, do you have something you want to add?
So you want to bring that up to 60%, is that right? Where are we now, and what's the target date?
Sure. So it's by 2025, we want to be at 60%. We're at 50% now when you include credentials.
And how does that compare with our 8 surrounding states?
It's comparable with our surrounding states.
Okay.
We have a note here, a tweet from Sean who writes, A-plus only covers students who have been in high school in Missouri for 4 years. That changes the mix slightly, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Our community colleges really are primarily intended to serve Missouri students. And so that residency requirement was put in place. Actually, and part of that is because A-plus started as a school improvement program. So it really was about improving high schools. And so that's the reason for the connection with the high school.
Well, we're going to have to let it go right there. Zora Mulligan, thank you so much for being with us. And thanks for bringing us up to speed on a lot of issues that are important to the state, needless to say.
Zora
Mulligan,
so
who is the new commissioner for higher education here in the state of Missouri. And thanks to Dale Singer, St. Louis Public Radio education reporter, also for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.